Canada's top military police investigator says he didn't look into complaints of torture in Afghanistan because he didn't know anything about it. Lieutenant Colonel Gilles Sansterre testified in Ottawa today at the Military Complaints Commission hearings. He's one of many top military and government officials being questioned about what role Canadians played in the torture of Afghan detainees under Afghan custody. Grace Pastine is in Ottawa as counsel at the hearings. She's the litigation director for the BC Civil Liberties Association. Hello, Grace.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
So can you tell us a bit about what you heard today in the testimony at the hearings?
Commander Sansterre indicated just an appalling lack of familiarity, first with the situation in Afghanistan. He indicated that he wasn't aware when he assumed his position as the head of this investigation service that there were really any problems with torture occurring in Afghan jails. We brought him to a number of human rights reports from reputable bodies, such as the State Department of the United States, the UN Rapporteur on Torture, Afghanistan's own Human Rights Commission, which Canada has been a fervent supporter of. And all of these reports indicated that torture was common, widespread, very frequent in Afghan jails, and yet he wasn't aware of any of those reports. He wasn't aware that a lawsuit had been filed against the Canadian forces that sought to stop the transfer of detainees because of the likelihood of torture. And then when it came to the actual investigations of commanders or allegations that commanders may have knowingly transferred individuals to torture, he basically closed the file without doing any investigation whatsoever. So, for example, one of the investigations that we questioned him about stemmed from an article that was published in the Globe and Mail. That was an article by Graham Smith, and it was entitled From Canadian Custody into Cruel Hands. Graham Smith was in Afghanistan, and he interviewed a number of individuals that were in Afghan prisons who all said that they had been in the custody of the Canadian forces and that they were then transferred to Afghan officials where they were beaten, tortured, and subjected to all sorts of cruel and inhuman treatment. Now, typically you would expect that with these types of allegations that an investigative force might try to collect evidence or interview witnesses to see if the allegations were substantiated, perhaps talk to some of the detainees themselves, perhaps try to find out if indeed they were transferred by the Canadian forces. But instead, the investigative unit that Commander Sansterre oversaw did absolutely nothing. He admitted today that none of the detainees were located or interviewed. None of the Canadian Forces members were interviewed. No witnesses were interviewed, and no evidence was collected. In fact, the only thing that the investigator did was read the article that was in the Globe and Mail. And on the basis of that article, he decided not to continue the investigation, and he closed the file. And what I found astounding today was that only after repeated questioning did Commander Sansterre admit that that investigation was inadequate.
What reason did he give for not investigating these claims?
It was difficult to understand why he didn't investigate. For some of the questioning today, he seemed to not understand that in fact, it could be a violation of the code of conduct that applies to members of the Canadian Forces, of the criminal code, of international law, to transfer people to a substantial likelihood of torture. It seemed that his focus was purely on whether Canadian forces themselves were torturing detainees while they were in Canadian Forces custody. And that of course is illegal and a violation of domestic and international law. But it's also a violation of law to transfer someone when you know that they'll be tortured. The funny thing was that under questioning, he finally admitted that he understood that to be the legal standard, but somehow there was just a disconnect between his understanding of the legal standard and what he actually did as a commander of the investigation service. And, you know, keep in mind, this is the investigation service that is mandated to investigate whether the Canadian forces violate domestic or international law. And it was very focused on the issue of detainees. So the fact that for years these transfers were occurring and no credible investigations were taking place at all is it's appalling and it's shocking.
Now, the BC Civil Liberties Association and Amnesty International made complaints, which initiated this whole military complaints process and hearing. I guess I'm just wondering, when you made these initial complaints, did you have any idea about, you know, the testimony that would be coming out of this process and just the lack of, the number of times that we'd hear examples like this where you know, safeguards were not in place and people were not actually checking to see what was really going on?
Well, we had spotty bits of information. We had filed a lawsuit in 2007, and that dislodged a lot of documents. But those documents were heavily redacted and were only part of the picture. And we didn't really have a complete picture of what the military police were doing. What we were quite certain of was that transfers to torture were taking place and that no one was doing anything to stop it, basically. But it's been just the extent, I would say the extent of the failure on the part of the military police has been surprising. And at least the testimony that we've heard to date. And what also is very interesting is that the Department of Foreign Affairs was conducting investigations in Afghanistan, and they were learning all sorts of very disturbing information about the fact that detainees were being tortured in Afghan custody after they were transferred. And yet none of these reports seem to have been sent to members of the military police. At least that's what we suspect at this point, and so far that's proven to be true. So far the military police officers that have testified have said they did not see those reports. So the big question then for Canadians is, why didn't our government make those reports available to the military police?
Do you have any inklings as to why that might be? Why there's that disconnect between those two departments?
At this point, I can only speculate, but it's certainly something we hope to get to the bottom of. Unfortunately, this commission has a limited mandate. They can only look into whether the military police failed to launch an investigation when they should have launched an investigation. They can't look at the larger question of what was going on in the Canadian government and why. And that's really why our organizations have been pushing very strongly for a public inquiry, because we think only then will the full truth come out.
And this Military Complaints Commission is a civilian body, so just wondering how much power it has to find fault in this case.
The Military Police Complaints Commission is somewhat similar to a public inquiry, so not unlike, for example, the Braidwood Commission or the Frank Paul Commission. That is, those kind of broad inquiries that have a truth-finding mandate, but don't have any real power in terms of mandating action. The Military Police Complaints Commission will, at the end of these hearings, it will prepare a report that it will send to high levels of the Canadian military. And then the Canadian military is mandated to respond to that report and to say what it has done to implement the recommendations of the commission.
Okay. And
so the simple answer is it does have some power, but not a lot of power.
Now, this hearing is actually resuming after quite a delay caused by lawyers who work for the Canadian government. I guess I'm just wondering if you can tell us a bit about that and a bit about why the hearing has been delayed.
There have been a number of problems concerning the disclosure of documents. And as you probably gather, all of these documents are in the hands of the Canadian government, either the Canadian government, the Department of Foreign Affairs, the Canadian military. And there have been serious and significant problems in having those documents given over to the commission. At first, the commission just wanted to launch an investigation and not hold public hearings. It can choose which process it will follow. And the chair at the time of the commission, Peter Tinsley, said in his written reasons that he simply couldn't continue to investigate the matter because he didn't have any documents, and he didn't think there was any chance he would get the documents unless he called for a public hearing. And then even once the hearing commenced, the Government of Canada still did not provide the documents that were needed, and many of the documents that were provided were heavily redacted. Ironically, the lawyers for the Department of Justice, they represent not only the Government of Canada, but they represent virtually all, except for one, of the military police officers that are the subject of this complaint. So they argued, first of all, that they couldn't hand over the documents because they were subject to national security confidentiality concerns. And also, they argued the hearings couldn't continue because it was prejudicial to their clients to not have the documents. It was very Orwellian, and the end result was that the hearings were indefinitely adjourned. Now we're finally proceeding.
And what prompted the hearings to resume?
The commission determined that there were enough documents at its disposal and that the disclosure had been fulsome enough that we could continue with the hearings.
Okay. And speaking of sort of withholding information, last week the hearings were actually held in camera, so the public and press were barred from observing the proceedings. Can you tell us a bit about why that was and what that was about?
In that case, there were two witnesses, and the Department of Justice was concerned that it would it would not be good for the identities of those witnesses to be publicly revealed. And that is why, at the last minute, they asked that there be secret hearings for those two witnesses. And then, of course, 2 days later, the transcripts of those witnesses were publicly released. But this clearly wasn't satisfactory for the public, for the media. The public has waited a long time and has a right to know, and has a right to be present at the hearings. And if identity was truly an issue, then our feeling is that there were probably other ways to go about doing that to protect the identities of the witnesses.
So at the moment, that information, their identity, has still not been released?
Well, their names and the transcripts of their testimony has been released.
Okay. Has that been made public?
Yes.
Okay.
It has, but there are no images of those witnesses.
Okay. And I guess I'm just wondering what we learned from those witnesses, or was it something that you feel should have been kept in camera?
It's, I mean, perhaps one of the biggest problems was that the request for the hearings to be held in secret came at the last minute, so it caught everyone, including the commission, by surprise. We take the Department of Justice at their word that that it was important that the identities of these witnesses not be revealed. But certainly, if there's a similar situation that comes up, we would ask that less extreme measures be put in place so that the public and the media could at least hear the witnesses, for example.
Okay. And tomorrow, Richard Colvin will testify. He's the Canadian diplomat who created a lot of controversy because he has said that every detainee transferred from Canadian to Afghan custody could have been tortured. What do you expect to hear from him tomorrow?
Well, we expect him to go into a fair amount of detail about his role and his site visits to Afghan jails and the detainees that he interviewed. He did say, in fact, that in likelihood, all the Afghans that the Canadian forces handed over were tortured, and that in Kandahar it was a standard operating procedure. And we expect that he may go into a bit more detail about where his reports were disseminated to, and perhaps he may have some information on why his reports may not have been given to the military police.
Okay. And this hearing is expected to continue over the next several weeks. When do you expect to receive a report or some kind of recommendation from the commissioner?
That is a good question, and the commission hasn't yet given any indication on how long that would take. For the moment, we're just concentrated on the hearings, which are scheduled to proceed for another 5 weeks, and I imagine it would take at a minimum several months for the commission to write its report.
And at the moment, Canadians are not transferring detainees to Afghan custody. Is that right?
Actually, that's not correct.
Okay.
Detainees are being transferred. We understand that there was a stoppage in the transfers in 2009, but transfers are continuing, and they are continuing with very few safeguards in place to protect the individuals that are being transferred.
That's definitely concerning news.
Yes, it is. It's very concerning.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Grace, for telling us about what's been happening in Ottawa.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Grace Pastine is the litigation director for the BC Civil Liberties Association. She's in Ottawa at the Military Complaints Commission hearings, where she's acting as a counsel for the BCCLA. And the hearings are looking into Canada's role in the abuse of Afghan detainees.